martyrs swinging in the wind, the dead eyes searching for messiahs in the stars, the bodies carrying the scars of no confession, no concession, no sympathy. The laughter from the front row buzzing loudly now in bars, over chicken in a basket. In the darkest corners of the central station, passing round the spirit that drove Rommel to his desert hole, smashed diamonds, took the gold, hidden cities in Brazil, and killed the savage. In the name of Mary, burn the witch, whip the bitch who shows her.
Happy Sunday. This is Swan.
And this is Nasa.
And you're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. Welcome, and I hope you're staying cool. Jesus, it is so hot outside. It's so hot.
I feel like I'm in a Tennessee Williams play or something of that sort.
Where you're just like,
oh, the hate.
Definitely, definitely. And as you know, I'm a big fan of Twitter blurps, so today we're welcoming Snow, who is a thinker, feeler, writer, music maker, and vibrational creator. You can find her at Twitter at thesnowglobe888, and she's here to talk to us about her writing and everything. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So let's talk first about the process. You said you're self-published and indie published. Talk about that process of writing and, I guess, putting your work out there and the decisions you made along the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Well, I guess it all started in grad school. I didn't start out thinking that I would self-publish. There's a lot of encouragement in grad school to shop around for an editor and an agent and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And that's grad school is a good community to build those connections.
It really is. And so that was my first path that I thought I was going to take. But I wasn't done writing the book that I was writing, which was a memoir at the time. So mm-hmm. I wasn't really at that point in the process yet. Got out of grad school, finally finished that book. And then somewhere along the line, actually found Amanda Palmer, who we were
just talking about her. We both love her.
And saw her brilliant TED Talk and just got into the idea of indie art and doing my own thing. And for my particular personality and value sets, it just felt like an exciting path to take, I think.
I like that path of like choosing something that's not mainstream and not like mass market and finding those niche like readers. So you wrote a book and it's available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And then do you have other books published that I'm missing?
It's kind of funny. I've sort of been one to play a little bit high and loose with what I do because I'm sort of in charge of it all. So I put out the memoir a few years ago. It's called Corpses Rarely Wander, How I Became a Loveless Trailer Park Nomad, which came out to a little bit of fanfare thanks to some other arts projects I was doing. I got some promo going with it. And then somewhere along the way decided that I was not happy with it and wanted to rewrite it, so I yanked it off the shelf and then ended up writing this other book that you've seen. So
The Book of Fire and Shade?
Yeah, which is a fantasy romance. It's total departure from anything else I've ever written.
So your first, I guess, piece, the completed, like, big thing was an autobiography?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that, because my personal journey is journaling.
Yeah.
I've always been journaling. I have boxes of journals, and I'm just like, I am a writer because I'm writing actively every day.
Yes.
I'm just not sure, like... it feels so me-centric to just be, like, so talk, I mean,
hear you.
Is this, like, you processing your life, or you, like, going through?
Memoir is interesting. I mean, that's actually what I studied in grad school at Hunter. I was actually, the program was for memoir writers.
Huh.
So they chose people with basically sort of bizarre and unusual lives that were also writers. And so it was a really interesting group of people.
Okay, that gives me lots of questions.
The
first is, so you talked about writing this memoir and then a couple of years later being unhappy with it and kind of pulling it back.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. Were there things that you, like, after putting it out there, thought maybe you shouldn't put that out there, or you just weren't happy with your wording?
Well, I mean, first of all, I guess I've always approached memoir as really a literary pursuit, and I hoped that I had digested my life well enough to not make it too processy, it's like telling a story
versus like explaining everything.
Yeah, or trying to invite everyone to feel bad for you or be impressed mm-hmm. with you. So it's just flat out storytelling is the way to do it. I think at a certain point I realized that I thought that I had digested what had happened enough to stand really far back away from it and just tell the story. And once it was out for a while, I just realized there were certain points where I couldn't actually do that, and I just didn't feel happy with
it
as it was.
Made you uncomfortable?
No, just not emotionally. Just as a writer, I felt like I hadn't done my job
that's fair.
A few of the passages.
Well, and so. I feel like the process of any writer is like building things, putting it out there, and like acknowledging this isn't your best work or your life work, and you're going to get a lot better with time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, part of doing this whole thing as an as indie projects without anyone else controlling it is mm-hmm. that I'm sort of welcome to play with whatever I put out there. And
nice.
So I feel free to do that.
And you can take it back.
Exactly. And then put it, I'm going to put it back out again.
Yeah. Just like the version that you feel
mm-hmm.
is what you, I don't know. There's like a click that happens and you're like, yes, this is, for me.
Yeah. And I mean, come to find out, sometimes you can feel that click
And then
sit with it even longer, and then it unclicks.
You're like, wait, I've processed more. Now it's different.
Yeah.
Well, I think that speaks to the power of rewriting stories, too. Rewriting your own stories to mm-hmm. empower yourself, which is, I think, why people write fiction or nonfiction is just like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So my other question from now knowing that you studied memoir,
I just wanted to say about rewriting, I feel like... At a certain point, I was so enamored with, like, I love the beat writers. I'm one of those.
Oh, yes. Tom Robbins.
I love.
I have a tattoo from the cover of Even Cowgirls Get the Blues on my shoulder.
Thank you. I reread Even Cowgirls Get the Blues and Another Roadside Attraction every spring. I call them my Bibles. Yes. Religiously, I reread
them
every year.
He's so funny. Tom Robbins is hands down one of my favorites, but he's so funny because as I read him, sometimes I get infuriated with, like, his nonsensical stuff, and I'm just, like, about to put the book down, and then I turn the page, and it's just like, whoop, this sentence goes straight to my heart, and I'm like, oh my God, and then I'm like back in it.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, he's not technically beat, but he's definitely
kind of post-wave.
Inspired. Yeah.
And so who more inspired you, like Jack Kerouac or...
Yeah,
Ginsberg.
I think it started with Kerouac. On the Road is definitely where I started. And what was that? Sorry.
There was a loud vibrating sound in the studio. I don't know if it picked it up on the air, but that's what we're talking about.
Sorry. But then a little bit later, Dharma Bums became my favorite. And then I love Ginsberg, of course, but I actually really love to read his books of essays, and also there's a book of his lectures, transcribed lectures, and those are actually my favorite things.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
To hear him sort of riff extemporaneously, if you will. So.
Yeah, and then be like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he just really goes to some amazing places. So, but, you know, of course, then they had the whole spontaneous prose, Bobsidian.
Yeah, and almost like a lack of editing, cleaning in the process. So it's just like, I'm writing what I'm writing, and you take it as it is, or you move on to something else.
Exactly, which is so beautiful, and I feel like I sort of started out doing that. And then ended up loving revision, and then tried to learn how to do even the revision as that, in that sort of spontaneous Taoist, spontaneous mind sort of thing. But in revision, which is kind of a hard balance to walk.
Yeah, definitely. Back to a question I asked a couple minutes ago.
Am I talking too circuitous?
No, not at all. I'm trying to make sure that we answer the questions that I ask on air.
Yes.
So, you studied memoir, and that was your MFA program. Mm-hmm. So my question in response to that is, do you have any favorite memoirs that you've read or been inspired by? So while you're thinking, I have two come to mind for me. I read Kate Mulgrew's book, Born with Teeth, and just her talking about, you know, being a woman in the industry, but also like her life path and relationships and love, and just like, was really enchanted with that, because even though you're doing a memoir, you're cutting and pasting to create a very nice story, and that's what I felt like that was. And the other one that stood out to me is Andre Agassi's?
The tennis player,
Nice. Was it Open... I don't remember what the book, but his memoir is called. But for some reason, that was really fascinating for me to read. And I kept, like, reminding myself of, like, you can read about anything as long as the writing is good. And he had help with that. But it was, like, reading about tennis. Who knew that was just, like, so gripping? And I was just, like, page turner. And I was like, whoa. I mean, and it's also a love story. Everything comes back to love, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Self-love or love of another person.
For me, it's Mindy Kaling's Is Everyone Hanging Out
With
Me? I
couldn't get into that!
Oh my God.
I couldn't get into it!
I love it so much. Well, no, here's my thing about it, is that Mindy Kaling, love out to her, had a horrible 20s. Mm-hmm. Like a horrible 20s. And it's the kind of book where if you read it and you're like, why am I not where I want to be right now? You read this book and you're like, she could do it. It's fine.
I did read Tina Fey's book, and I think I tried to read Mindy Kaling's book right after that, and I was like, meh.
It's okay. I couldn't get into Amy Poehler's.
I couldn't either. Yeah. I finished it, but it wasn't enjoyable.
Amy Poehler's is challenging. But Mindy's I read, like, once a year whenever I'm feeling down as a, like, reminder that things are going to get better. It's okay. Just keep going at it.
It's just your 20s. It's fine. Just
it's
get
fine.
It. You know what? Having turned 30, my life is great, so...
I want to read Mindy's, actually.
It's
I
really
love her.
Good. It's
funny because I enjoy her as a person, but I've tried to read it twice, and I get it from the library, and then it's due back, and I haven't opened it. So I'm like, well, I guess.
So it's really easy
it's
for
not
me
happening.
Because she writes the way I talk, just with a bunch of, like, not actual likes, but you can hear the valley girlness in her voice, and so it's just very easy for me to go through it. Oh no, how do I forget her name? Let Me Entertain You. Oh golly gee. It's okay.
Barbara Streisand?
Carly G. Oh, did she write a memoir?
No, I don't know.
No.
Oh.
Back to you. Did you have any? We're just gapping on. I was giving
please,
you time to think.
You guys should just talk the rest of the time. I would love it.
Snow is so modest. This is like one of the first things I noticed when she came in the studio. She was just like, I'll just, you know, you can talk and I'll just listen and be happy.
Pretty much.
She's so interesting.
You know, I think with me and memoirs, I really like the memoirs that aren't technically, like, modern memoirs, like Anais Nin, her diaries, and, like, Henry Miller, and all the older folks who wrote their books that we call fiction that are actually memoirs, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, even Hemingway. In a way, Kerouac, really.
Yeah, totally.
So I think those are the ones that really inspired me to study that format. Yeah, and then, like, randomly, one memoir that I loved was Julia Butterfly Hill when she lived in the redwood tree. I don't know why, but it just got me.
That sounds gorgeous.
Yeah.
I haven't read it, but now I'm inclined to do so.
Yeah, total tree hugger. Me. I mean, her too, obviously.
That reminds me, we had Stephanie and shucks, what's his name? Ethan, that's not right. They started a website called Call Me Ishmael, in which they created this voicemail where you can call in and leave a voicemail about a book that you love or a book that changed you.
Hmm.
And there's this girl that called in and she read a book about reading poetry to trees, and she was so inspired that her and her friend went to Central Park and just read poetry to trees and
hugged them.
And like... It's just like, oh, that's so enchanting.
I really love that. I'm trying to remember which. There was a haiku master, might have been Ikkyu, who would write poems on leaves.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's like a practice of, what's the word? It reminds me of like creating these giant sand mandalas and hours and hours and then just like... brushing it away.
Yeah.
Just like non-attachment.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, this will die and decay, and I accept.
Yes.
Like, this might be the most brilliant thing ever created, and it's temporary, and it will be gone in a year.
Yes. Zen gardens. I'm glad I remembered something.
Very
glad it's my birthday.
Thanks, Nisa. Your contribution
was
solid. So... let's talk a little bit about your book, A Fire and Shade, a trilogy of faded love and magic. So that was solidly fiction after doing a memoir.
Mm-hmm.
And where did the seeds for that come from? And talk a little bit about that process.
I mean, honestly, it's a little bit mysterious because the only full-length book I'd written was... the memoir. And then, I mean, I started out writing poetry and some of the projects I've done around this city, like with the Dushan Tinak Dance Company, who's amazing, by the way. And they performed to my poetry at BAM. And I mean, that's all done. And
oh, wow,
that sounds
awesome.
Lovely.
Is it really on YouTube, wonderful, findable? I mean, actually, probably is. You think I would have looked it up, but I didn't. I mean, I was there, but
it happened.
You saw it. You don't need to see it.
I don't need to see that again.
let's see if we can find it on YouTube, and if it's there, I'll post a link.
Okay, cool.
For our listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, we can talk about that. But they're amazing. And so anyway, so I'd done these other genres, and it kind of just started as, I don't want to say a lark, but kind of a lark. I was moving around, and as my memoir alludes to, I've lived a pretty nomadic life pretty much all the way along. And so I was just bouncing around house sitting, and I found NaNoWriMo, you know, the thing.
Oh,
where,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I decided as I was house sitting that I would take that challenge and write the
first draft of a book.
So,
quick blurb. Mm-hmm. NaNoWriMo is National Novel Writing Month, and it's the month of November, and it's like this... I guess community support for just like writing a shit ton that month and like having a novel, first draft novel by the end of the month. So
yeah, minimum 150 pages, I think it is, to write in a month, and that's a pretty solid chunk. So I was, anyway, I was just sort of fascinated by the idea and just started thinking, what would I write? And I thought, fantasy romance sounds interesting. And then they call them actually pantsers in the NaNoWriMo tradition, where you don't do an outline. You just sit down and start writing, and whatever comes out is how it goes. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did for a month. I had no idea what the story was going to be. Every day I would just sit down and see what happened when I started writing, and no plot outlines. A lot of people would want to murder me for saying that, but I found it exhilarating. It works for me. So anyway, it's a great process, and that's how it started, basically.
Great. And then give us like the insert cover blurb of what it is about.
Oh my God.
Or I can read like on Amazon.
Maybe you should read. I feel like I'll go crazy on it.
No, that works. Let's hear what Amazon. Oh,
God. You have 4 5-star reviews.
Ooh. Oh, come on, Amazon.
Yeah.
Step up your game, buddy.
Okay. I thought there was, but obviously I'm not
Amazon
the best at promo.
Just, like, wants you to commit, apparently.
There's, like, her writing has been called eloquently steamy by the New York Times, evocative by the London Financial Times. Oh, here it is. The arrogant Favian. Thank you. De Grey desires the magical and beautiful Issa Adaran.
You're so great.
No, this is the funny thing. Anyone who's a reader can commiserate with me of like, I don't know how to say words. I just know how to read them. I'm just like, that word.
I've really tormented people with these names.
This is awful. Anyways, so Favian? Favian.
Yes, both.
Favian. Favian and Issa?
Issa.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So Favian desires Issa for himself just as much as he craves the Book of Fire and Shade, the ultimate treasure of knowledge and power. When the crimson-haired Issa gets put in harm's way, her mother, a powerful magical practitioner, casts a dark spell of protection, which will have untold repercussions for everyone in their world. Intrigued. Issa's lifelong friend, Dante Bishop, that was an easy name.
Yeah.
Did I say it wrong?
Yeah.
Dante?
Yeah.
It's Dan T.
It's Dante.
Dainty? His attraction to her seems to be written in the stars, sacrifices everything to save her. Will Issa and Dante ever be together? Will other powerful entities have their heart set on the book? The fate of the star-crossed lovers, as well as the fate of magic itself, is teetering on the edge of inescapable darkness in this story of love, sorcery, and secrets. That sounds...
There you have it.
Yeah, I'm really
crazy and amazing.
Yay.
That's like the ultimate teaser of like... you know, sometimes when you read a teaser, you're like, I know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going
to
happen.
There are a lot of twists and turns, I have to say. I didn't even know when I was writing it, as I said, so...
Great. Well, this is a nice time, I guess, unless you have more thoughts about teasing audience readers, listeners. Book of Fire and Shade, if you are intrigued and if you're interested in, is it fantasy or it's not sci-fi?
It's fantasy. It's like witches, magic, true love, that kind of stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you have any inclination, you can go to Amazon.com and get the book for $5. That's like a nice coffee.
Yeah.
And for your reading pleasure, you can read something that's eloquently steamy and evocative. That's fun.
Which those blurbs are about my poetry, but yeah, it translates. Anyway.
It's still there, right? That's an interesting segue, too, just talking about writing poetry versus writing like, not poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like my writing, especially as I've adopted what we talked about, the river writing practice, which is what I do on my show. I was just very flowy. It's seated in poetry, so obviously that creates the, you know, the variables for something poetic to come out.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, this is nice and fluffy and beautiful, but like it's not, it's also not anything. Anyways.
Well, what do you mean by it's not anything? Sorry.
Like it's not a story. I mean, when I was like earlier last year, I was like, I need to like write a story. I was really like, I want to write, you know, a novel. I want to write something fiction. I didn't want to write from my life because it feels too close. It feels like, oh, I can't talk about my dad and this person and that person because that they're still here and they're going to be like, what the fuck?
That's very tricky.
So if I'm writing fiction and anyone complains, I can just be like, it's fiction. Fictional. So I took a few classes and I was like, you know, joining all these workshops and all these meetups of like writers groups. And, you know, I'd bring what I had and people would be like, you know, my river writing specifically. And people would be like, that sounds great, but it sounds like there's a story behind it or under it. Mm. Or like, where's it coming from? And I'm just like, I don't want to talk about it. Anyways. Okay, so speaking of river writing, I would love to do a quick, maybe 3 to 4 minute river write. So for... Are you so nervous?
A feeling of dread washes over me.
Listen, this is gonna... I'm not a writer at all, so... So you're gonna be amazing.
I think you're definitely gonna need to read yours in my stead.
I mean, so first of all I have is the daily poop. I'm a dog walker Monday through Friday. So my scraps of paper say the daily poop on the other side.
Okay.
But you're welcome to have them.
I think that makes me Thank you. Even happier. I think you should take your headphones off to...
No.
Never.
And a pen.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Okay, so we have paper and pens in the studio. If you're at home listening, you can find them. And this is really, really, like, liberating practice in that it doesn't have to be good. You're not under any obligation to read what you wrote. Is just an opportunity to spontaneously create. And so since we kind of, as I was researching, I mentioned Amanda Palmer came up a couple times, and I was like, we must have met through some, like, internet algorithm that's like, you guys both like Amanda Palmer. Maybe you should be friends.
Yes.
So here is...
The internet is so smart sometimes.
So smart. So here, hopefully, is a poem read by Amanda Palmer. And for our listening pleasure and for our river writing inspiration today.
And sorry, we just choose a line that we like and springboard off of that?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Or a word or a phrase or entire poem or something completely different that it made you think of.
Always writing against the prompt is an option. So let's see if this works.
I prefer cats. I prefer the oaks along the Warta. I prefer Dickens to Dostoevsky. I prefer myself liking people to myself loving mankind. I prefer keeping a needle and thread on hand just in case. I prefer the color green. I prefer not to maintain that reason is to blame for everything. I prefer exceptions. I prefer to leave early. I prefer talking to doctors about something else. I prefer the old fine-lined illustrations. I prefer the absurdity of writing poems to the absurdity of not writing poems. I prefer, where love's concerned, non-specific anniversaries that can be celebrated every day. I prefer moralists who promise me nothing. I prefer cunning kindness to the over-trustful kind. I prefer the earth in civvies. I prefer conquered to conquering countries. I prefer having some reservations. I prefer the hell of chaos to the hell of order. I prefer Grimm's fairy tales to the newspaper's front pages. I prefer leaves without flowers to flowers without leaves. I prefer dogs with uncropped tails. I prefer light eyes since mine are dark. I prefer desk drawers. I prefer many things that I haven't mentioned here to many things I've also left unsaid. I prefer zeros on the loose to those lined up behind a cipher. I prefer the time of insects to the time of stars. I prefer to knock on wood. I prefer not to ask how much longer and when. I prefer keeping in mind even the possibility that existence has its own reason for being.
So going ahead with a 3 to 5 minute free write, and here's some music to help you. Taking a couple minutes to wrap up that thought, finishing that last sentence. too scary, right? Just writing.
<That's fun. laughs> Whatever you say.
I got a bit of a buzz because I don't have a pen, so I was using an erasable marker.
Oh. I'm getting a bit of a buzz from that. That's a really strong marker.
I'm so sorry. I was like trying to...
I have like 20 pens. I wish I was paying attention.
You're too far away.
I'm not getting high off of the marker, damn it.
Oh, God.
Do either of you have an inclination to read?
If you want to go, are you sure?
You okay. Go first. Yeah.
So basically this got me to writing like several little poems, like two line poems. And by poems, I mean just two lines that I call a poem because anything can be a poem.
As can't long as contain there is intention. Poetry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they don't have to rhyme. All right. So bear with me. How long will it take until I know exactly what I want, to know what I prefer? What I don't prefer. There we go. Sorry about that. I prefer cats.
Surprise!
I know, right? Yay! They always make me smile, but don't rely on me. I'm a terribly unreliable person. I will break under that pressure. Just in case. I keep it with me just in case, expecting things to fail because they never go right. I have a charger, a computer, an exit plan, just in case. Leave early and do a lot in the time you gain. Overstaying a welcome is never as fun as getting a head start on something new. And finally, cunning kindness tricks me into loving you.
Thank you. Snow, do you have any inclination to read?
Oh, jeez.
She might, folks.
Anyway, okay. I prefer the absurdity of writing poems to the absurdity of not writing poems. I preferred always to sit in trailers and shacks, sweltering hot or punishingly cold, while writing out words that no one else would read, that the gods would never punish me for. I prefer dropping through space to flying. I prefer the anonymity of the poem, the leaning heart, the altered head. I prefer cigarettes to goodness. I prefer sin to questioning myself. I like endings, the drain of tears, the ache of no more. I may tell you that I hate endings, but don't believe me. They're my meat and ale. I love letting go, being alone again. I relish the suffering of things that disappear.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I love that. Okay, mine stems from existence has its own reason for being. My life has been a consistent struggle against what is, but I feel that as a result, I've developed a type of radical acceptance in many circumstances. Shit happens. Shit hits the fan. Shit all over. And everything looks shitty and smells putrid. And I'm like, all right, I can deal with shit. I can deal with things and I can most definitely deal. And shit is most definitely a thing. The thing that comes harder for me is the non-things, the dreams and the night terrors, the invisible devils on my shoulder. Emotions, my heart. These are not things. These are not shit. They are golden light and shadow, and I am still mastering smoke and mirrors.
I like that.
Yeah.
Thank you both.
Yeah, thanks for doing that. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Ink and Worm, spontaneous creativity, all things reading and writing. And if you're interested, we're on all the socials. Check us out and talk to us. It's fun. I'll talk back, unless you email me, and then I might not email for a couple weeks. And sometimes texting, too. Damn it.
Nasa and I... She's never going to talk about any of
no, eventually I will. Nasa and I talked about how I have this, like, almost stupid talent for, like, not responding for a ridiculous amount of time, and then I respond, and then people are still, like, amiable. Like, for example, I emailed one of my professors... He responded right away, and then I didn't respond for like 3 months, and then was like, oh, hey, blah, blah, blah. And then he responded right away again, and I'm like,
3 months, that's pretty impressive.
I don't feel like this is how I should be interacting with the world, but I'm glad it's working.
I like that for you. That's good.
It's a good random talent. So let's also dive into maybe... talking about tarot and meditation, which is something that we have in common.
Yes.
So, I mean, for people who are interested, how many tarot decks do you have, or do you have like a deck of choice?
I actually only have two full decks. I have a fairy deck that was my very first.
With, what's his name? By Brian, what's his name?
It's by a lady, and I can't remember her name. I lost the book so long ago. I just, I don't really need it. But, and then fairly recently, I just got the Thoth deck, which is the Aleister Crowley
one. I've been hunkering for that one. And do you like it?
I really do. Yeah, it's a really interesting deck. I actually just, I'm probably going to forget the name of the book, but I just started reading a book about the deck, like a really in-depth look at his process around it and stuff like that, which is fascinating because he's really weird and interesting.
That's really great.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you lost the book for the fairy deck, and you're using the book for the, is it Thoth?
Thoth, yeah. I mean, the fairy deck is actually pretty self-explanatory and really easy to use in an intuitive way, I would say.
I'm like Googling right now to try and find these decks so that if people are curious, I think I'll just say I'll post links to some fairy decks if you want to explore.
Cool. I mean, I could tell you when I got home.
Yeah.
But put it in the notes. Right now.
Yeah, I have, I want to say Bill somebody is the creator, but they're really beautiful images, and so maybe this is me anthropomorphizing a deck of cards, but I feel like the fairies are tricky. They're like kind of sneaky, and I've noticed that a lot of times when I'm like feeling really emotionally aroused, they're just like, you're emotionally aroused, so we're just going to, like, display your most, like...
I don't think that's you anthropomorphizing.
Angsty fears.
At all. sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's one of those things where I'm really good at telling other people when that's happening, but it's when it's when I'm, like, the one drawing, like, death, don't do it. I'm just like, oh, I'm nervous, and this is probably me being nervous, but the fairies are saying, like... I think it's really legitimate that, you know, for whatever purpose they have, they do reflect where you're at. Mm. And you can cloud a reading for your own cards by, like, being really, you know, strong.
Well, the deck also has its own. My boyfriend has one that I wish I could remember the name of it, but it has these like moon people as the primary image. Hmm.
So when you get home, send me.
I will.
We'll have like five tarot decks for you guys.
Nice.
But like what I found, I don't like using his deck because every time I use it, it always pops up the worst case scenario, and like it's a very dark deck, and so I just imagine that like. That's where its leaning is towards. Mm-hmm. It either does that or it gives us no answer whatsoever. It's like, here's the path, and butterflies. And I'm like, what? and then I have my own deck, which I'm kind of learning to work with and kind of not, which is a bit more Spanish, I guess. Mm-hmm. The drawing influences are more Spanish.
Nice.
And so that one tends to be a little bit better, but it and I are still kind of...
It takes a while, I feel like.
It does, and I backed away from tarot for a little bit because I found that every time I would do it, it would just be like, this is how you're feeling. And I'm like, I know that. And I'm like, well, then why are you doing
those are
this?
That's what I'm talking about with the fairies. Like, I'm like, I mean, for example, let me say relationships. Like, I would, you know, meet someone new, be really excited, and I'd be like, fairies, tell me. And they're like, patience. And I'm like, damn it.
Yeah, that kept happening. Or like when I would do my career, it would be like, well, you're artistic, you took time off, you're getting back into acting, and things will either be shitty or great, and that's going to be based on your choices. And I'm like, no, I know that, give me something more specific. And it was like, well, what the fuck do you want from me? And I'm like, no, that's valid, you can't tell me I'm gonna do great.
So Snow is gonna start doing readings. you're going to start doing tarot readings if listeners are interested. And the tag for that is a Twitter tag. Is that what your primary mode of communication, and then an email with the same name?
Yeah, I've kind of started a Twitter for it that's like tweets and retweets about esoteric crap and kind of occult stuff, even though I don't prefer that word. But and then tarot stuff, magic stuff, all the esoteric kind of stuff. And then if they're interested in reading, they can email to attractiontarot@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was. I was trying to pull it up on my computer and like, oh snap, something went wrong. Thanks,
oh, it's
Google
the
Chrome.
Dinosaur. You can play that in your video game. That's awesome, though.
So in your practice, you use your two decks, and you've just had a lot of experience with tarot.
I've been doing it a long time.
Tell us a little bit about like a standard reading that I would get from you if I were to ask for such a thing.
Well, I mean, on the internet right now, the way that I'm doing it is like basically I send a voice recording that's 25 to 30 minutes long of a reading. It's sort of tarot reading for introverts in a way, and you don't have to, like,
you don't have to interact with someone.
You don't have to do anything. You just receive your reading.
It's like getting an astrology reading that's personalized just for you.
Private and personalized. Yeah, absolutely.
True divination.
Yeah, yeah.
Which also sounds like a tarot reader's, introvert reader's
format.
You're like, I don't have to talk to you.
It just is. I mean, you know, I'm certainly an introvert
but
myself.
But you can still, this speaks to energy, which I've been fascinated with and read a lot about over the past few years. And a lot of like energy healing modalities like Reiki or the connection. Reconnectivity, it's just the one that I like a lot. There's distant energy healing. So I could like send healing energy to my friend in California, and like there's not extensive scientific studies, but there's a lot of personal anecdotal things of like, this is a powerful thing for people. And I feel like tarot is the same way, as I can just like not energetically step into your energy and be like, I'm doing this reading for this person that I've never met. And it's actually sometimes more powerful in clarity because I'm not fogged up by knowing you or, you know, having preconceived notions of what I think you should do or think you should be or who I think you are.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, it's actually, I mean, it's like what you were saying about reading for yourself, which I've, honestly, I don't really do that much. I have other people that I trust that I ask to read for me.
I used to, when I first discovered tarot, I would do readings every morning, and it was insane.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot to be gleaned from it, but
I think it's a good way to begin to understand.
I'm not emotionally unattached from myself enough to to trust myself to interpret it very well, honestly. Yeah. So I just try to be realistic about it. It's just not something I can probably do very well, separate myself
but
like that.
It's a gift that other people can then give you and that you can in turn give to other people.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of nice. It ends up being an exchange, which is always sweet. So,
well, believe it or not, we have 10 minutes left.
What?
Wow.
Time flies when you're having fun. And we like to end our show with a rapid-fire series of questions.
Oh, my God. For who? For whom?
For you.
Sorry.
For all of us.
Although we say rapid-fire, it's more like we ask the question, you have time to answer.
Okay, great.
So also, quick tag, this is Radio Free Brooklyn. If you want to join the community, if you want to donate, buy us a cup of coffee, maybe commit $1 a month. That's $12 a year. It's like a cocktail. You know, give us a drink. You can go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. There's tons of events hosted by and related to Radio Free Brooklyn. It's really fun. Like, some of the best parties I've been to have been,
hands
you know,
down. I would highly recommend if you can make
I believe
it
that,
and
actually.
Such interesting people. I mean, if you were listening before, they're talking about like pornography, and sometimes you'll talk about open relationships, and they'll talk about sports and music and news and Brooklyn, and it's just like
tarot,
you never know what's gonna come.
Yeah,
there's Cooper has an occult podcast that's biweekly. So.
And karaoke. Oh, nice. So
yeah, Empty Orchestra comes after us. Anyways, we're not going to plug for too long, but Radio Free Brooklyn is a lot of fun. So join the community and stay in touch. So rapid fire, my first question is, so I feel like when people are entering puberty,
what?
In that transitory phase, there's like a book that changes you.
It gets a lot more PC from there.
So my question to you is, when you were a teenager, was there a book that was just like really influential in your transition from child to adult?
The Bible. I mean,
really? That's the best answer.
Wow, that went super PC. That's pretty G-rated right there.
I was
The Bible? Are you kidding me?
I know, it's definitely not, but it's very family.
Look at Crumb's version of the Bible, and you'll be like, oh, incest.
Look
oh, adultery. Oh,
of
rape.
The Bible.
Oh, murder.
Pretty much it.
Because, well, we kind of talked about it before the show, but religious, conservative upbringing.
Yeah. 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 Very,
and then
very,
you
very...
get whiplash and you're like, never again.
Oh, yeah. Then I was like, Tori Amos. I don't know. It just got all crazy.
It all ended when you began listening to Tori Amos.
Pretty
and you
much,
were like,
oh. Yeah. She changed my life. When I found
That's it. Wonderful.
But yeah, no, nobody told me anything about anything. And actually, I was so shy that like I actually got out of my sex ed class. I had my mom write me a note so I could go to the library and read. That's making me sound like such a freak.
I wish I had done that.
I'm sorry.
No, because I lived in Utah, and the sex ed class is like, here's a penis, here's a vagina, don't use them. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, it might have been way more damaging. I mean, I went to the library and read Catcher in the Rye.
Well,
instead.
And this is something me and my boyfriend joke about, is like light petting, heavy petting are terms used to be like, these are sexual
so
acts. Who actually is like, hey, babe, you want to do some light petting? Mm. Maybe some heavy petting later?
Hey,
like, oh, my God. Nobody says that. If you've had sex and you say
that,
let me know.
I don't want to talk to them anymore.
It's creepy.
It's very creepy.
I don't know. I think I only ever used them when describing what I did the night previous. Like, well, we were making out, and then there was some light petting.
And it was nice. Okay, Nisa, next question.
We know who's keeping up this terminology.
I know, right?
Keep it alive. Utilize those sex ed
courses.
Hey, it's courses.
Like the 13-year-olds who are trying to find the appropriate way to explain what
it's
happened.
True.
You touched my nipple.
Wow.
Okay, like anyways, I'm done, Nisa.
Yes.
That is a soundbite.
Do you have a, oh God, what are they called? Like I was going to say dirty secret. No, do you have a guilty pleasure? See, that's why.
No, okay, the official question is, do you have a guilty pleasure in terms of Netflix streaming, podcast consumption?
You know, like, what is, or TV
like,
watching even. I
like
personally love Dance Moms.
Current media fix.
Okay.
Perhaps.
I mean, honestly, I don't feel that guilty about it, but, and this is just kind of weird, but I'm slightly obsessed with the show Frasier.
Is
that good?
Do you like Frasier?
I love Frasier. I've been obsessively watching Frasier. I have a thing for Niles. It's a well-known fact that I want to just give him a blowjob.
I love
totally.
This.
He's so lovely.
He is. Yeah. And he's so, like, sexually repressed, it would be fun.
He is, of course, gay in real life.
I know, yeah. I know. Yeah. And this is at no way.
He's probably
me
had
being
some
like,
great blowjobs.
David, oh, yeah. I respect him as an artist. Like,
so much.
100% hands down.
He's so brilliant.
He really is.
He's
brilliant. But Niles, that character that David Hyde Pierce created.
Exactly, exactly.
I want to give a blowjob.
Oh, good Lord. I totally understand.
This is beautiful.
Oh,
yay, bonding. And see, here I am, like, I don't watch it, but I know every week we ask this question, and every week Nasa's like, this guy, I just want to, like, fuck his world, like, blow his mind.
I swear, like, I've never heard this show before, even though I love you guys now, and now I'll listen, but I had no idea that I could bond with anyone about this.
Yeah.
Oh, what a wonderful world. Okay, my next question is a little bit more serious. What's the best piece of writing advice you've been given?
Mm, been given. I mean,
there's a lot of advice. I'm sure you went to school for writing.
There is. I mean, I would say, oh God, yeah, no. I mean, there is a lot of good advice, but I mean, I would say, just rewrite until you think you can't rewrite anymore, as opposed to what I was talking about before. But but learn to relish it. Learn to step into it again with that first mind feeling.
Which I think also speaks to, like, putting something aside.
Mm-hmm.
Patience.
Patience. yeah. Oh, I was going to say something else, but forget it. I think that's probably what I'll
embrace say. And enjoy rewriting.
Embrace it big time.
Well, I've had an agent on the show who his advice was, like, please rewrite, edit until you're going to shoot yourself if you have to look at it one more time, and then it's probably ready to send off to an agent.
And I mean, and of course, he's coming from it from a real businessy end,
which is
great.
Sell.
And I'm coming from it from, like, do that, but learn how to do it like it's the first time. That's the practice. It's like it's the first time you ever read it.
I'm gonna, like, be selfish here. Another question, because we mentioned before the show that you meditate, and I was like, oh God, I meditated for 100 days solid, which means I can
lovely.
Do it.
Yeah.
And then I stopped again. But how has meditation influenced your writing?
I kind of feel like it's always been part of it, because a really early influence was reading Natalie Goldberg, which
yummy.
Which the practice that we did, of course, like, really reminds me of her. And again, she's very beat influenced, and spontaneous prose and mixing Zen meditation with writing.
But then revising, cleaning it up.
Yeah, but then later revising. So it really started with her. I just feel like it allows me to, there's just like a vast open space that you have to get to when you're making anything. The page is like the void, and you can't be afraid to face it. So I feel like if you know how to face the vastness of your own mind and
like step up to the vortex and get sucked in.
The vortex, absolutely.
The vortex.
All of that.
It reminds me of like the oh, what is it? It's like this, the ox thing. Oh my God.
The ox thing.
The ox thing.
I'm intrigued.
So there's this, I don't know if it's Zen. Damn it. We have 1 minute.
Oh God.
I'll post a link, but it's like these 12 plates that talk about, like, seeing an ox, watching the ox.
Oh, that's like, right.
You've heard of it. I'm sure you've heard of it. I'm sure most people have encountered it at some point, but, yeah, it's just like this way of interacting with the world. That's just like observe, interact, and then also like accept.
Mm.
And it's this strange stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. Well, thanks so much for listening. Thanks, Snow, so much for being here.
Thank you both.
And,
thank you, everyone.
I've really enjoyed our conversation.